Mike Malloy, M-A-L-L-O-Y. Thanks for tuning in tonight. This hour is sponsored by Lynn Baggett. Lynn's message, such irony. The reason people incorporate is to gain benefits of not being a person and avoid liabilities of being a person. Now the Citizens United ruling says corporations are people. Right, Lynn. I don't get it either. Thank you, Lynn. It's about 7:30 past the hour. We have an especially exciting treat for you tonight. I got something from Bob Alexander. Wednesday, I guess. Tuesday. And didn't get around to it. And I have to say that this is probably... You know, Bob is not known for his chipper uptone or upbeat point of view, which is why I like his writing. You know, post-apocalyptic writing to me is just always so much fun. But he's written one here that... It even got me nervous. So stick around. I think I'm going to do that bottom of this hour. It's a humdinger. Ah! Apparently, having moved to Canada has not given him a rosier outlook on conditions on this tired old planet. Speaking of this tired old planet, well, actually, speaking of Mercury, did you hear about this? There's a mysterious object, seriously, spotted near Mercury. Planet-sized object spotted near Mercury. The United States Naval Research Laboratory analyzed data from the... Heliospheric Imager -1, HI-1. And that's the camera that took the footage in question. So here's the deal. There is a object. It says here, theorists have seized on the image captured from the coronal mass injection last week, the CME. Last week, as suggestive of alien life hanging out in our own cosmic backyard. Specifically, the solar flare washing over Mercury appears to hit another object of comparable size. YouTube user Sinixter said in his video commentary on the footage, quote, it's cylindrical on either side and has a shape in the middle. It definitely looks like a ship to me. And very obviously, it's cloaked. Now, his YouTube, Sinixter, S-I-N-I-X-S-T-E-R. He's gotten hundreds of thousands of views just this week. How, of course, he was able to determine that the object was, quote, obviously, end quote, a cloaked spaceship remains a mystery. Of course, there's another scientifically sanctioned explanation for the curious images. Now, I bring this up because we didn't do church last night, but this is how religious madness gets inside your head and won't let go. You know, let's call this cloaked alien spaceship, some sort of god. And there it is. Ah, I've seen God. Oh, maybe. But there is a scientifically sanctioned explanation for this image. And of course, there's no way that skeptics and UFO enthusiasts are going to endorse it. According to Eric Pfeiffer at Yahoo News, one of the people at Life's Little Mysteries put the question to scientists in the solar physics branch at the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory, the ones who actually shot the footage here. The head scientist in that group, Russ Howard, and the lead ground systems engineer, Nathan Rich, say the mysterious object is, in fact, Mercury itself.
What?
And what we're seeing in the footage is the equivalent of Mercury's wake. Think of a boat. What we're seeing is where the planet was on the previous day, according to these scientists, as it travels through the solar system on its natural gravitational path. This is what they said, quote, to make the relatively faint glow of a coronal mass ejection stand out against the bright glare of space caused by interplanetary dust and the stellar galactic background, the Naval Research Laboratory scientists must remove as much background light as possible. And they explained that they determine what light is background light and thus can be subtracted out by calculating the average amount of light that entered each camera pixel on the day of the coronal event and on the previous day. Light appearing in the pixels on both days is considered to be background light and is removed from the footage of the coronal ejection. The remaining light is then enhanced. You follow me there? I know the three or four people out there, and I could probably call their names, who absolutely understands what I just said. Well, I don't, but I know I have listeners who do. So the analysts say the practice works even better when applied to far-off objects such as stars, which don't move much relative to the sun. But for moving objects, especially planets, the process is a little more complicated. And making matters even trickier is Mercury's status as the closest planet to the sun. So the scientists said, quote, when this averaging process is done between the previous day and the current day, and there is a feature like a planet, this introduces dark or negative artifacts in the background where the planet was on the previous day, which then show up as bright areas in the enhanced image. So there you have it, just in case somebody tells you, if somebody hasn't already, there's a planet moving in around Mercury's orbit. Or worse, God is coming. Quick, it's the rapture. No, neither of those. It's just, well, I hate to use this term because nobody else did, but I'll go ahead and use it. It's an optical illusion. Don't email me. I know that is not absolutely scientifically correct to say it's an optical illusion, but for lack of a different term that I could understand and work with, I'll call it that, an optical illusion. So I just thought I would let you know, because somebody's going to come up to you and tap you on the shoulder if they haven't already, and they're going to say, they're going to tap, yeah, are you saved? What? There is an invading force coming into the solar system. You know what the Mayan calendar said. Are you saved? The Mayan calendar said that? No. The Mayan calendar said everything's ending next year. There it is. It's in the orbit of Mercury, and it's coming. Are you saved? So, just thought, it has nothing to do with anything. I just thought I would toss it out for you. Okay. Okay. We have a bunch of stuff to cover tonight, so I hope you're going to stick around. And again, after the bottom of the hour, I'm going to share with you Bob Alexander's All the World's a Grave. Woo! You're laughing? You think he's a comedian? What? He makes you laugh? He's a clown? You think this is funny? No, I'm laughing because if I don't, I don't know what I would do. We'll be right back. I bet I have a lot of questions, maybe some suggestions, and I bet they're gonna ask me about men's insanity. You got a real nice planet here, but you better watch your atmosphere, and you better clean your water.
to that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, 21 past the hour here. Probably where you are also. So, since this is, I don't know, this may turn out to be a horror science fiction night or something. I'm not sure. But how about this? This really atrocious story about the Air Force that we learned about last month has just gotten worse. Did you hear about this? I think it was last month. It was revealed that Dover Air Force Base had been caught dumping portions of troops' cremated remains in a Virginia landfill. Okay. Air Force officials said the practice, quote, was limited to fragments or portions of body parts that were unable to be identified at first or were later recovered from the battlefield and which family members had said could be disposed of by the military, end quote. Officials, quote, could not estimate how many body parts were handled in this way, end quote. And now the Washington Post has followed up on the story, and they're reporting that the partial remains of at least 976 body fragments from 274 identified troops were disposed of in such a manner. In addition, a group of 1,762 unidentified remains were also disposed of in the landfill for a total of more than 2,700 incinerated fragments. Now, I want you to pause and think about that for a second. You know, regardless of what your feelings are about war, and I'm about as anti-war, unless it's against Republicans, as I could possibly be. But consider families that, for whatever reason, allow a son, a daughter, a male or a female from the family to join the military. And either by design or accident, that family member winds up in a combat area. And possibly even in a combat zone, possibly even under fire. So here this American is. His family back home understands all of a sudden that maybe, just maybe, of course, a lot of families won't admit this because they have the peer pressure of remaining patriotic. But all of a sudden, they start to realize or have a thought, maybe their family member shouldn't have done this. Because they're starting to come out of the ether and realize that we don't fight wars for truth, freedom, justice, mom, apple pie, white picket fences, and the flag. We fight wars for one reason and one reason only: to satisfy the demands of capitalism. That is the only reason we fight. Even the Great War, so-called. That's it. That's the only reason. So, the family starts to realize this, and then they get the horrific notice that their family member is now dead. No more gatherings for holidays, no more patting him or her on the back, no more saying, way to go, you really stood up here for America. You know, no, it's all gone now. All gone. And then to find out this. Dover Air Base is the main port of entry for America's war dead. And according to the Washington Post, landfill disposals were never formally authorized under military policies or regulations. They also were not disclosed to senior Pentagon officials who conducted a high-level review of cremation policies at the Dover mortuary. Air Force and Pentagon officials said last month that determining how many remains went to the landfill would require searching through the records of more than 6,300 troops whose remains have passed through the mortuary since 2001. Officials there say they were just treating the remains as, quote, medical waste, end quote. But clearly, they knew they were doing something odd. The military now creates unclaimed, cremates, I should say, unclaimed and unidentified body parts and buries the ashes at sea. Kind of hides the evidence. So, all these people who went off to fight for corporate America, went off to die for capitalism, went off to kill for capitalism. And now I understand, once a person's dead, their body, dust it was, and to dust it shall return. I understand all that. But to the family members to find out that Cousin Harry's leg is somewhere buried in a landfill in Delaware, isn't that just a little bit unnerving? Isn't that just a little bit, more than a little bit, disrespectful or something? I don't know. I don't know.
Forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find, when your death takes its toll, all the money you...
The Mike Malloy Show. Because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
Oh, my goodness. All right. 25 before the hour. It is time, once again, for A Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's episode is entitled, All the World's a Grave. Hey, Mike. Most of us will spend our tomorrows doing what we did today. If we have a job, we'll go to work. Kids will go to school. And stuffed somewhere around all that is shopping, laundry, cooking, and everything else. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow look pretty much the same. Here's what's going to happen if we all keep putting one foot in front of the other, courtesy of Jeremy Leggett, geologist turned environmentalist, writing about the near future in 2006 is when he wrote this. Quote, the price of houses will collapse. Stock markets will crash. Within a short period, human wealth, little more than a pile of paper at the best of times, even with the confidence about the future high among traders, human wealth will shrivel. There will be emergency summits, diplomatic initiatives, urgent exploration efforts, but the turmoil will not subside. Thousands of companies will go bankrupt. Millions will be unemployed. Once affluent cities with street cafes will have queues at soup kitchens and armies of beggars. The crime rate will soar. The earth has always been a dangerous place, but now it will become a tinderbox. As with the Great Depression, economic hardship will bring out the worst in people. Fascists will rise, feeding on the anger of the newly poor and whipping up support. These new rulers will find the tools of repression, emergency laws, prison camps, and a relaxed attitude toward torture. End quote. Bob goes on, if that's as bad as it's going to get, then everybody can breathe a huge sigh of relief. But sadly, we've got a lot more down to go. We keep on making babies, so the world's population is projected to reach 7.9 billion in 2025. In 14 short years from today, 5 billion people, over half the world's population, is expected to experience periodic water shortages. Rising temperatures and lack of water are likely to decrease the production of staple foods in many of the planet's poorest countries by up to 50%. Within the next 50 to 100 years, it is estimated the world's population will contract to somewhere between 500 million and 2 billion people as a result of peaking resources, population growth, and global climate change. The hardcore peak oil experts say 90% of humanity is going to die. The optimists say only 5 to 6 billion people will. Regardless, it's called a die-off. David Goodstein, a professor of physics and vice provost at the California Institute of Technology, Caltech, said the easiest energy alternatives, coal and natural gas, might carry us through to the end of this century, but, quote, by the time we have burned up all that fuel, we may have rendered the planet unfit for human life, end quote. From die-off to extinction. Runaway climate change will eventually evolve to some new stable state, but most likely without humans. As Matt Savinar wrote in The Peak Oil and Die-Off, quote, looking ahead to rapid climate destabilization, the loss of perhaps a quarter to half of the species of life on Earth, and the widening gulf of poverty and living standards, we see that it may not have been a passage at all, but a road toward the abyss of extinction. But it is a mistake, I think, to regard the possible suicide of humankind as an anomaly, rather than the logical outcome of a wrong turn that now must be quickly undone. Quote, end quote. And then a later quote from the same writer, civilization as we know it is coming to an end soon. This is not the wacky proclamation of a doomsday cult, apocalypse Bible prophecy sect, or conspiracy theory society. Rather, it is the scientific conclusion of the best paid, most widely respected geologists, physicists, and investment bankers in the world, end quote. Geophysicist David Archer wrote, quote, the climatic impacts of releasing fossil fuel CO2 to the atmosphere will last longer than Stonehenge, longer than time capsules, longer than nuclear waste, far longer than the age of civilization so far. It will persist for hundreds of thousands of years into the future, end quote. So, Bob writes, is it possible it might now be too late to stop the die-off? That's the most likely outcome. The worst-case scenario is extinction. But the most likely outcome for a massive die-off is based upon the simple fact that we will continue to do tomorrow what we've done today, which is nothing. It takes 20 years to switch completely from fossil fuels to alternative forms of energy. As I wrote before, if Bill Clinton was one-tenth the visionary that he thinks he is, we'd almost be done by now. Not one of our so-called leaders from the House, the Senate, or the Oval Office will go on television and outline how, starting tomorrow, all the steps necessary to transition from fossil fuels will be taken. Period. The security of not only our country, but our planet demands that we start at once. And now, back to our regularly scheduled programming. If all goes well, 20 years after that broadcast, that imaginary broadcast, we'll see if that was enough to stave off doomsday. If we depend on politicians, if we bet the earth that our so-called leaders will take command of the dire situation we find ourselves in, then salvation will always be 20 years from someday. You know, I woke up this morning thinking I was going to try to describe the loathsome putrescence that is Carl Levin and John McCain. What possessed them to dream up the provision included in the National Defense Authorization Act that allows the government to imprison anyone, anywhere, indefinitely? And why did the majority of the Senate pass it? Essentially, writes Andrew Napolitano, essentially this legislation would enable the president to divert from the criminal justice system and thus to divert from the protections of the Constitution any person he pleases, end quote. Will a Republican-dominated House pass this filth onto Obama? Will we once again be hostage to the hope that Obama won't drop a lit match onto the Constitution? It's like listening to an old radio serial as the announcer breathlessly intones, "Will our hero rescue the country in the nick of time or cave into the demands of the fascistic overlords?" Tune in again next week for the next thrilling chapter of Obama Man! I was trying to imagine what combination of money, extortion, or worse, could make McCain and Levin draft the most unconstitutional provision imaginable. Upon taking oath, senators-elect must swear or affirm that they will support and defend the Constitution. What compelled them and the majority of the Senate to toss their oath of office into the shredder? I was still grappling with the seemingly absolute corruption of our two-party system when I just stopped. I was reacting to the noise again. There's not going to be enough food, water, or energy to sustain the prisoners in the gulag or the guards. We're all trudging up to the cliff. We can either spend our tomorrows like we spent today and guarantee civilization will be ripped to pieces in front of our children's eyes, or we can begin to rationally dismantle our insane civilization. The best starting point I found is this book. Here's the title: Deep Green Resistance, Strategy to Save the Planet, by Derek Jensen, Lier Keith, and Eric McBay. Go here to find it. DeepGreenResistance.org. DeepGreenResistance.org. Regards, Bob. Another Moment with Bob. All the world's a grave. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. And as a postscript to Bob's missive, we shall put at our website, MikeMalloy.com, a link to DeepGreenResistance.org. Blum is, he's a former administrative law judge and death penalty defense attorney. He's the author of three books published by Penguin Putnam and contributing writer for California Lawyer magazine. His work has appeared in a wide variety of publications, from The Nation and The Progressive to the LA Times, LA Weekly, Los Angeles Magazine. Bob also sent me a couple of quotes, or a quote from Bill Blum I want to share with you, and some quotes here regarding American exceptionalism. This is from Bill Blum. It cannot be repeated too often. The secret to understanding U.S. foreign policy is that there is no secret. Principally, one must come to the realization that the United States strives to dominate the world. Once one understands that, much of the apparent confusion, contradiction, and ambiguity surrounding Washington's policies fades away. Examine a map. Iran sits directly between two of the United States' great obsessions, Iraq and Afghanistan. Directly between two of the world's greatest oil regions, the Persian Gulf and the Caspian Sea areas. It's part of the encirclement of the two leading potential threats to American world domination, Russia and China. Tehran will never be a client state or obedient poodle to Washington. How could any good, self-respecting Washington imperialist resist such a target as Iran? Bombs away! This is from John Le Carré. Is that how you pronounce it? Le Carré? Yeah. The author. He writes, God appointed America to save the world in any way that suits America. God appointed Israel to be the nexus of America's Middle Eastern policy, and anyone who wants to mess with that idea is A, anti-Semitic, B, anti-American, C, with the enemy, and D, a terrorist. John Bolton, future U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, writing in 2000, quote, because of its unique status, the United States could not be legally bound or constrained in any way by its international treaty obligations. The U.S. needed to be unashamed, unapologetic, uncompromising American constitutional hegemonists so that their senior decision makers could be free to use force unilaterally. End quote, John Bolton. Now, this is the guy that got the recess appointment by George W. Bush to be ambassador to the UN. This man is crazy. John Bolton is just simply, there's no need to embellish it with profane language. This guy is crazy. Crazy. Condoleezza Rice, future U.S. Secretary of State, writing also in 2000, was equally contemptuous of international law. She claimed that in the pursuit of its national security, the United States no longer needed to be guided by, quote, notions of international law and norms or institutions like the United Nations because the United States is on the right side of history, end quote. That was in Z Magazine. Newsweek editor Michael Hirsch, quote, U.S. allies must accept that some U.S. unilateralism is inevitable, even desirable. This mainly involves accepting the reality of America's supreme might and truthfully appreciating how historically lucky they are to be protected by such a relatively benign power, end quote. And the last one from Madeleine Albright, U.S. Secretary of State, in 1998, she said, quote, if we have to use force, it is because we are America. We are the indispensable nation. We stand tall. We see further into the future, end quote. As Graham Chapman yelled in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, run, run away! Oh, and they hate us because we buy houses? Right. Oh, my God. How did it work out this way? I understand Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! Are broadcasting from Durban, South Africa, all this week, while this farcical event is taking place. The climate thingy. This hour has been sponsored by Lynn Baggett. Lynn's message, such irony. The reason people incorporate is to gain benefits of not being a person and avoid liabilities of being a person. And now Citizens United ruling says corporations are people. Sheesh. Thank you, Lynn. Thanks for the sponsorship. And thanks for putting the word sheesh out there so I can say it. Sheesh. I used to say that a lot, didn't I? All right. Top of the hour break here. We'll be back for another hour of fun and frivolity. And we'll even take some phone calls if you are, you know, well-behaved. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Number here is 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. Regarding the message from Lynn last hour about corporations wanting to, or people wanting to avoid individual responsibility regarding liabilities, they form corporations, and so on and so forth. What Lynn said, well, Prairie 2 writes, corporations don't consider themselves persons, but rather some sort of God-like entity. The Supreme Court rules in their favor, regardless of whether its ruling would be liberal or conservative, but only that it favors the gods. The gods command the lesser beings in the Congress to do their bidding. Those inferior beings are more than willing to comply, as the corporate gods can smite them at will. Time to kill the gods once and for all. Come on, pray to it. And then he adds this. Yes, the Mercury, planet Mercury hubbub, is just another computer software shortfall. None of the pictures you see from space are really pictures, but rather a computer interpretation of reality. This is not any different from the human brain that creates an interpretation of reality. Nothing that you have ever seen, quote, quote, is real, quote, quote, but rather what your brain has processed as its best guess. This is why you need to follow logical rules, also known as the scientific method. Otherwise, you start to believe in miracles and see the face of Jesus in every piece of toast. or somebody, right? Yeah, I know. It's just, I wonder if I'm going to be laughing if I'm alive when the CO2 level on this planet has become so intense that I and my children and grandchildren and you and my neighbors and family members will be sitting there going, trying to get in air.
But you got to laugh. You got to laugh. Yeah, I've hung out with Bob Alexander up in several times up in Seattle. We've gone around and done things. And he's not that morose. It's much worse than you could possibly imagine. No, not really. He's a fun-loving guy. He really is. But, you know, he's seen the light, and it just kind of has been a bit overpowering. Now, you can read his stuff. You don't have to, you know, send me an email. We're going to get a copy of that. It's at tvnewslines.org. I think it's also probably at opednews.com. Bob is an official web writer now. So anytime you want something that Bob Alexander has written, just type in Bob Alexander, I guess. And you can always pick it up at his website, too, superbeans.com. One more item here before we go to the telephones. You know how all the states are hitting bankruptcy, or they don't talk about it, but it's coming. It's coming as surely as night follows day. ThinkProgress.org has documented the repeated tax dodging of large corporations, some of which, like GE, you know, GE, that produced Jeffrey Immelt, who is Barack Obama's chief jobs advisor. Anyway, some of these corporations, like GE, have gone entire years without paying taxes, despite hauling in massive profits. Now that phenomenon, Think Progress is informing us, has spread to the states, where many corporations have largely avoided paying state corporate income taxes, despite growing profits. Some companies, like DuPont, avoid state taxes altogether, paying nothing from 2008 to 2010, even as its profits piled up. But DuPont wasn't alone. According to a study from Citizens for Tax Justice and the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, 68 corporations avoided state taxes entirely for at least 1 year from 2008 to 2010, costing state governments at least $42.7 billion. $42.7 billion that these capitalist entities have ripped away from public school systems, public safety, sewers, garbage pickup, parks, emergency medical responders. This is how filthy it is. This is why I scream and froth and rant and rave every night. As the New York Times reports, quote, to gauge how much Fortune 500 companies are paying in corporate income taxes, the study looked at the 265 of them that are both profitable and who disclose their state tax payments. It found that 68 reported paying no state corporate taxes in at least 1 year between 2008 and 2010. Altogether, the study found that the companies reported $1.33 trillion in domestic profits from 2008 to 2010, but paid states only about half of what they would have if they had paid at the average corporate income tax rate of all states, reducing their state sales taxes by some $42.7 billion. There you go. Now, when you hear people talk about the greedy bastards and how they're destroying everything, $1.33 trillion. In domestic profits and cheating the states out of a, do you know what 42 billion is up against a trillion? Well, a trillion is 1,000 billion. So what's 42 billion? Seriously. But when you are involved in the kind of colossal capitalistic greed and disrespect for everything and everybody and every place on the planet, not just on the planet, but in the atmosphere, you don't give a goddamn. You couldn't care less. I made $1 trillion, they collectively shriek. And I haven't paid any taxes. Har, har, har. Nice, huh? This is the Republican Party. This is what Bain Capital does. Bain Capital owns Clear Channel Communications, or what's left of it. And Clear Channel, in turn, owns hundreds of radio stations that determine what you will and will not hear. See how it works? Very simple. As the New York Times notes, the share of state revenues coming from corporate taxes has steadily declined since, oh, here's a surprise, since 1980. Oh, my. From about 10%, then, state income revenue from corporations totaled about 10% of their budget back in 1980. Now it's down to less than 6%. And despite Republican rhetoric calling for lower corporate taxes on the national level, America's rate there remains low as well. Corporations continue to sit on huge amounts of cash, trillions, without investing in job creation. But Republican politicians and corporate leaders have called for even larger tax giveaways to these filthy bloodsuckers. Meanwhile, of course, the lost tax revenue would have gone a long way toward plugging budget holes. Well, the holes were filled, of course, but they were filled by cutting education, cutting social services, cutting programs that help states' most vulnerable and needy residents. You see how that works? We'll be right back. If you ain't got the door, ain't me.
Maybe you want a house or a farm, not do nobody no harm, just take your vacations by the mountains or the sea. Don't sell that old cow for a car, you might want to stay right where you are, take a little advice from me. 'Cause I read the want ads every day, voices in the paper always say, if you ain't got the do-re-mi, boy, if you ain't got the do-re-mi, you better go back to your beautiful Texas.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's Mike Malloy.
I really don't say that too much anymore. I mean, it's pretty obvious, isn't it? I mean, really, come on, wake up, smell the Java. Okay, where are we, as promised? Back to the phone calls. Bob is in Tennessee. Hey, Bob.
Well, hello, Michael.
How are you?
I'm a little shaky after Bob Alexander.
I'm telling you.
But I find nothing to disagree with. That's what makes me shaky.
I know. I hear you.
Listen, over the last 10 years or so that I've been tuning in every night, in fact, I probably have been here more often than you because I even listen to the reruns.
Oh, my God.
But I'm going to say that over the years, I have heard you say, how did it turn out this way?
Yeah, I have.
Hundreds of times.
Yes.
And I'm going to not treat it as a rhetorical question.
Uh-oh. You have an answer?
I have what I consider to be the most profound factor in what happened to the USA.
All right.
I know that you're familiar with Marshall McLuhan.
Yes.
He talked about the extension of human beings in media,
mm-hmm.
how the joints and elbows were the levers for the mechanical, and how the electronic media is the extension of our nervous system.
Right.
Bringing about a global village, a global consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's my contention that what has thrown our civilization off is the warping of the media Now I've read McChesney and Poston, and I know about the Mothers Against Violence on TV and such, but I'm not talking about content.
Right.
I'm talking about a vulgarization of the media where, in the development of the civilization, the technology was not utilized in its natural manner.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an analogy. Letter writing is to movies. Letter writing is to movies as the telephone is to television. That is to say, we used to write letters, and they were edited, they were put down in a certain form. And the movies are also edited in the same manner.
Mm-hmm.
But the telephone gives us instant communication, gives us tone of voice. You can hear my nervousness because I'm afraid I'm not going to get this out just right.
Mm-hmm.
And television also turned radio into an audio-visual instant communication. But it was not allowed to be that way. It was turned back into movies. Television is edited. Television is mostly movies. It is not instantaneous communication like our telephone conversation now or like the radio that people are listening to.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, the media was not allowed to fulfill its natural function in the society, which would have given us instant knowledge of visual as well as audio. Now, this may sound a little subtle and a little far-fetched, but there is a tremendous difference between what we consider to be reality and what we experience. I heard on NPR one time that they edit the politicians' ahs and ums and such out of their interviews. And one time I heard them talking to someone who was taking part in the recording of a symphony orchestra, where he said that they had done one part of the symphony 100 times to get it right into the record. Well, no one can compare themselves to these cleaned up versions and feel equal to what they are hearing.
Right.
You remember the bloopers in the beginning of TV?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bob, I'm running out of time here. Right up against this bottom of the hour break. Can you put a capper on it in 10 seconds? Go.
We have an inferiority complex in this country because none of us feel equal to those that we hear and see in the media.
There you go. I will definitely agree with that. And even knowing, as I know, that it's all fakery and illusion and what McLuhan said it was. I hear you, Bob. Thanks, man. Appreciate the insight.
Life is funny. Skies are sunny. Bees make honey.
Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. 25 before the hour. Gary is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hey, Gary.
Hi, Mike. Nice to talk to you. I met you a few years ago at the convention center when you were in Minneapolis for 950.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for the Blue State Bash.
Yeah, I'm a first-time caller, though, for your program.
Uh-huh.
I just talk a little bit about last night when you were talking about the Japanese-Americans.
Uh-huh.
That was completely racial with them, but they're talking about the Germans. My folks grew up around, my father was attached to the Japanese Americans in World War II, the last 6 months of the war in Italy.
Uh-huh.
And he said, they were the most decorated outfit we had. He said, they were the best we had. And he was attached to the black soldiers, too.
Right.
But he said, before he got in the war, before we were in the war, he grew up down there in southern Minnesota by Duval, Minnesota. It was all German there, Scandinavian. My folks were. And the Germans, some of them were watched because they actually, the stuff they were doing that was pro-German, some of them, the new immigrants. So they were watched for actually things that they weren't supposed to be doing, but not just because of mass pickup like the Japanese Americans. But anyways, that was going on some.
Yeah. Well, sure.
The older German immigrants, they tended to be much more loyal and Americanized.
Yeah, but the fact remains, as far as I know, that no Italian Americans and no German Americans were rounded up, their property confiscated, and placed in internment camps out west someplace. That was reserved for Japanese Americans on the West Coast. And also, I don't believe, although if this is wrong, somebody will correct me, I'm sure, but I don't believe that in suspending habeas corpus, in other words, suspending the Constitution, Franklin Roosevelt, for the duration of World War II, I don't think he suspended it, or it wasn't intended to suspend constitutional rights of Italian Americans or German Americans. It was suspended because of Japanese Americans.
He had a real bad record on the lynching laws, too, and that was because he was trying to get his New Deal through. And down south, those southern senators that were Democrats at that time, he had them to get the New Deal through. And if they voted to stop the lynchings, they would throw them out of office. And, of course, a lot of them probably were bigoted themselves and senators in those days. And, of course, when Johnson passed the civil rights law, all of them, they're all Republicans down south now anyways. They left the Democratic Party.
Well, I think what you're pointing out, and, Gary, I appreciate your call, thank you, is that, the history in this country is very seldom, if ever, what it really appears to be. Bruce Enberg wrote in that little bit here a few minutes ago about what you see is depending on the operation of your ocular system and how your brain interprets these little vibrations as they proceed to your brain. And I think the same thing to a far greater degree is true about history of this country, whether it's recent, immediate, or early. You never know. You know what I'm saying? Mike is in Salt Lake City listening on XM. Hello, Mike.
Hi, how you doing, Mike?
Good.
Yeah, I just want to share with you, I did call Orrin Hatch's office in Washington, D.C. to register my opposition to the National Defense Authorization Act.
Uh-huh.
And the young lady who answered the phone told me that what I'm saying is wrong. And I said to her, listen, I got this information from four different talk show hosts, and that includes your show, about the act. And she told me, the act says this and that. And I go, hey, just put me down for being opposed to it. We don't need another law to prop up another law. We already have laws on the books to deal with terrorist problems.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we need it? And then she just took my name and just hung up on me. And I just want to, get some of your insights as to what went on between me and Orrin Hatch's office.
Well, the only thing I can add, Mike, and I'll go ahead and say it on the radio here rather than on the telephone, And thanks for the call. I think what you experienced is what anyone would experience who called a senator, Democrat or Republican, who voted for this suspension, permanent suspension of the U.S. Constitution. There's no halfway ground here. If the Defense Authorization Act passes with these chunks in it, and Obama signs it, which he's vowed not to do, but he's vowed to do and not to do a lot of things that he then completely reversed himself on. So we'll see. But if it becomes law, then that's the end of the Constitution until someone sues and it works its way up the Supreme Court. The catch-22 in all that is, of course, that if the aggrieved party, the party who wants to sue, is being detained without charges, without anything, how does that person make the charge, get to court, hire an attorney? I mean, just on and on and on. Let me give you an example here. I forget where I saw this, but there is one of the CIA's most important secrets in the war on terrorism, according to this article, was hiding in plain sight on a leafy residential street along a busy set of train tracks in Romania's capital. Romania. There, tucked in the basement of a government building, the CIA ran a clandestine prison, former U.S. intelligence official said. For years, the building, codenamed Bright Light, housed some of the CIA's most important terror suspects, including Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who this article refers to as the mastermind of 9/11. Yeah, he was also the mastermind of the crucifixion. He was also the mastermind of the Chicago fire. He was also the mastermind of the San Francisco earthquake. He was also the mastermind. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed readily confessed to anything and everything because of the way he was tortured, as would you, as would I, as would anybody. But I digress. Even after the detainees were shipped off to Guantanamo in 2006 and reports about the prison began to surface, the Romanian government repeatedly denied any knowledge of its existence. Now, you got to wonder why. But jump ahead or jump back. The Romanian prison was part of a network of these so-called black sites that the CIA operated and controlled in countries as diverse as Thailand, Lithuania, and Poland. Oh, and by the way, all the prisons were closed by May of 2006, yeah, of course. And the CIA's detention and interrogation program ended in 2009. Right. Okay. The CIA declined to comment on this prison for the article. The detainees, let me see here, the CIA prison opened for business in the fall of 2003 after the CIA decided to empty the black site, the torture room that they had in Poland. That's according to former U.S. officials who spoke on condition of anonymity because they didn't want to have their throats cut and their corpses dumped on a road somewhere in Silver Spring, Maryland. Well, I added that part because they were not authorized to discuss the detention program with reporters. Oh, really? I wonder why. Anyway, according to the article here, shuttling detainees into the facility without being seen was relatively easy. After flying into Bucharest, the detainees were brought to the site in vans. CIA operatives then drove down a side road and entered the compound through a rear gate that led to the actual prison. Now, of course, they only did this at night when there was mist in the air and rain falling. And most of the lights around the prison entrance were burned out light bulbs. You know, you've seen the scene. The detainees could then be unloaded and whisked into the ground floor of the prison and into the basement. The basement consisted of six prefabricated cells, each with a clock, an arrow pointing to Mecca. The cells were on springs, keeping the detainees slightly off balance and causing disorientation. During the first month of their detention, the detainees endured sleep deprivation and were doused with water, slapped, forced to stand in painful positions. Doo-doo. And on and on and on and on. You know, why is it so hard for the average American and every Republican or conservative right-winger to understand that the techniques used and advocated and sanctified by the U.S. government for decades involved mass murder, invading countries without provocation, torture, butchering children and women and non-combatants? Why is that hard? You know, if we heard of a country that was operating with the kind of record that the United States has, you know what we'd want to do? We would want to invade that country and blow the goddamn thing up, wouldn't we?
Everywhere. I do not like them on my station. I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
For the hour. Coming up next hour, the object of my affection will be the Senate this morning. Boy, they got up early and got to work, didn't they? The Senate Republicans turned down Barack Obama's nominee to head the newly formed Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. His name is Richard Cordray. This is the organization that Elizabeth Warren spent quite a bit of time organizing and setting up. And then, of course, the Senate refused to confirm her, so she gave them all the finger and went to Massachusetts and is now going to defeat, what's his name? The senator there, Brown, Scott Brown. But I want you to hear this next hour, so I hope you'll stick around. It's another example of the destruction that the Republicans especially, but both political parties. And I know, I'm not talking about equivalence. I really am not. The Democrats are destroying the system by their cowardice and their refusal to fight against these predatory bastards. Capitalist America only rents Democrats. They own Republicans. That's the essential difference. And the Democrats could fight back. They really could. They could. The reason the Democrats get no support anymore from the traditional Democratic base is because most of us Democrats understand the depth of the sellout. And we realize that it's just a chump's game now. You know, voting for a Democrat, voting for a Republican, it's a fool's game. It makes no sense. Now, before you send me the emails about, you know, blah, 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 what about? If you believe that, I mean, go ahead, you know, vote the way you want to. This audience, we have 38 people in our audience. We're not going to have any bearing on the reelection or not reelection of Barack Obama. So, of the 38 people who listen to this program, vote how you want. I mean, you know, but it has been demonstrated over and over and over and over again. I mean, did John Kerry fight back when it was obvious that Ohio had been fraudulently put into George Bush's column? Did Al Gore pull out a saber or a pistol or a musket or something and say, if the voting doesn't continue, I'm going to shoot the next puppy that walks by? No, you know, Democrats did nothing. So that in 2004 and 2008, the death of this Democratic Republic, the fate of it was sealed. And the fate was a complete death. That's it. It's over. That part was over. Next came the part of destroying the Constitution, which has been effectively brought into reality by 8 years of Bush-Cheney and 3 years of Barack Obama. And not that garbage crap that Michelle Bachmann and the rest of these right-wing morons talk about. You know, oh, my God. I sometimes think that they have been hired just to completely distract from the real constitutional destruction that's been going on. You know, and then you can reset, well, you know, the black sites were closed in 2006. Oh, stop it. And torture and other forms of extracting information, no matter what the whether the information is true or not, that stopped in 2009. Oh, please, please, will you stop it? I'm serious. Ay, 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 ay. But the House has now passed a bill. A handful of Democrats crossed the aisle and voted with all the Republicans, a bill that would give the controlling party of either chamber of Congress veto power over any major new regulation passed, over any new regulation that passed the House yesterday, the House of Representatives yesterday. The measure was called by Republicans. It was named, Republicans called it Regulations from the Executive in Need of Scrutiny, R-E-I-N-S, REINS, the REINS Act. And what it would do is require Congress to sign off on any new rule, you know, environmental rule, occupational and safety health rule, any rule estimated, it doesn't say who will estimate, to cost more than $100 million. Congress has the right to veto the president. right? I mean, this is total insanity. You know what's going to be left after 8 years of, well, whatever, starting in 2000, starting December 12th, 2000, do you know what's going to be left in a very short time of the original idea, not necessarily the original documents, but the original idea of a democratic republic, of representative government, of one person, one vote, of yada, yada, yada. Do you know what's going to be left? A pile of ashes. That's it. Ah, to hell with it, you know. We talk about this every single night. Doesn't mean a thing. It really doesn't. What was Bob Alexander's headline? Welcome to the grave, or the earth is... I don't know. You scared the hell out of me. All right, stick around. I'm going to go fix a cheese sandwich, and I'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. Continuing its egregious practice of trying to sabotage and destroy the entire middle class, the Republicans did it again this morning, didn't they? Party line vote, almost. Senate Republicans blocked or continue to block the nomination of Richard Cordray to head the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. What is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau? What is that? It got established last year by the Obama administration as an attempt, whether it, you know, adequate attempt or not, at least an attempt to stop the fraud that is perpetrated against the American consumer every single day. Every single day, by cheats, liars, sneaks. A lot of these people are centered, obviously, in the financial services industry, in the banking industry, in the so-called paycheck loan industry. In I don't know, have you ever had a product with a warranty on the product, and you go to collect on the warranty, and you get the runaround and some kind of dog snot answer, plus a bad attitude, right? We don't have consumer protection in this country to the degree that it's needed, and the predators know that. Capitalism operates best with no regulation at all. Once you start regulating capitalism, you force the predatory sons of bitches to act like human beings, and they cannot. It is against the capitalist nature to show anything other than absolute, unbridled, frothing, foaming at the mouth, greed. You know, I got in the car the other day, and the radio dial was set on the Atlanta station that carries the Pig Man. Because in the mornings when Kathy takes Molly to school, sometimes she'll listen to that station for the news, traffic, and weather. They're real good with news, traffic, and weather. So I tune in, and the Pig Man's on. I thought, you know, my hand immediately goes to grab my pistol to shoot the goddamn radio. But wait, Mike. Listen, let's see what he's got to say. So I did. I listened to him for about 10 minutes. And he's talking about how the government forced the banking industry to make loans to people who are unqualified. That's exactly verbatim how this rat bastard formed the sentence. The government, the past couple of years, get it? Force the lending institutions to give loans to people, you know, unemployed janitors and scum. Not like me. I'm rich. I'm big. I eat a lot. So I listened to that for a couple of minutes. I thought, yeah, that's the meme that's out there, and it has been out there. That, who is the last group that they blame, that these right-wing devils blame? Oh, Acorn. That's right. Acorn, this little old volunteer agency that became a force for equal housing back in the 70s. They were put together to stop redlining. Any of you old enough remember what redlining was? Where real estate agencies, in collusion with banks, would draw a red line around entire sections of a city and say, no loans there. Now, if there were buppies or yuppies who wanted to move in there and start rehabbing houses, good luck. The redlining precluded anybody, black or white, from going out. Young entrepreneurs, black or white, doesn't make any difference, from going into those neighborhoods. Couldn't get insurance, fire insurance, couldn't get a loan. If they did get a loan, the rate, interest rate was off the charts. So Acorn was one of the organizations put together back in the 70s, if I've got this right. I hope I got it right. To stop. And they filed lawsuits against these predator bastards and started winning cases. Well, when that happens, well, my God, bunch of Negroes out there trying to break out of the ghetto. Got to stop that. Right? Isn't that how it always works? Come on. White folks don't understand that. But a lot of black folk do understand that. Or I should say all black folk understand that. A few whites get it. I'm in the group of whites that get it, by the way. So, part of shifting the blame, the responsibility for what happened here at the real estate bubble has been that meme, that lengthy meme, that it was Acorn, that it was the government forcing. Oh, yes, sure. The government forces Citibank and the rest of them to make crappy loans. And why does the government do that? Because we live in a dictatorship. We live in under socialism. That's why. Jesus. And there are people out there who sit and listen to this garbage, this vile, vomitous garbage from Limbaugh and the rest of these swine every single day and bob their heads and go, yeah, that's what happened. Yep, that's what happened. Yep, that's what happened. Yep, that's what happened. Over and over and over again. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Note the second word. Financial. Was designed. And the woman who designed it is now running for the Senate in Massachusetts. Elizabeth Warren. Remember her? Oh, you're going to hear more about Elizabeth Warren. The right wing just about pooped its own bloomers when Elizabeth Warren got out there and said, all right, here's what we're going to do. What? You mean we can't lie, cheat, and steal anymore? Oh, my God. I thought we stopped Acorn. Rush! Rush! Help! You know, you folks have got to understand something. The Republicans, the right wing, corporatists, capitalists, they are out to destroy this economy, this society, as it has developed itself over the past 200 years. Actually, over the past 50 years. Actually, over the past 50 years prior to the last 30. I'll get it right. This attempt by unions, by workers, to build a middle class. Jesus, it seems so long ago when I was a kid growing up. Well, it was. But I mean, thinking about how the whole idea back then was to work hard. The predators had not started circling yet. The capitalist predators were still working on stealing everything they could out of the environment, extracting. Do you know that prior to World War II, I think 60% of the world's oil, I know I got the number wrong, but it's around there, it came from the United States. We were the big engine. So as long as the capitalists could mine and drill and plunder, okay, let the union, okay, we tried to kill them off in the 20s and 30s, didn't work. All right, Jesus Christ, go ahead. Well, they want it now. Minimum wage? God. So it's been a long struggle. The middle class, workers, people like you and me, actually, struggling, fighting, trying to develop a middle class where we could send our kids to college, where we could have a home, where we could drive a car, where we could have a job that gave us dignity, where we could save money to take care of grandma and grandpa when they got old, right? You know, that real commie crap, right? God, I hate these people. I just hate these right-wingers. I mean, it's just part of my DNA now because I've spent a lifetime watching these predatory bastards try to destroy, devour, burn, loot, rape, pillage, everything they could get their hands on. But I digress. Off into my rage again. Sorry about that. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was put together a year ago. And the Republicans have done everything they could do up to this morning to prevent a director from being confirmed. Hopefully Obama will do a recess appointment and to hell with these bastards. His name is Richard Cordray. 45 Senate Republicans signed a letter back in May refusing to confirm any nominee to the post unless the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's power was substantially weakened. Weakened. We'll be right back. I know they've all been talking about me. Something wrong with me. Out of all the hours thinking, somehow I've lost my mind. But I'm not.
The Mike Malloy Show. Because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
Too bad it doesn't kill a Republican, huh? 21 past the hour. This morning, the Senate voted to defeat or to block the nomination of Richard Cordray to head the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They said they're going to 45 of these scum signed an agreement. Another one from what's his name? Probably Grover the Norquist. Unless 45 of them signed an agreement, said we'll block anybody unless the powers of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is significantly or substantially weakened. Republicans, you see, are doing once again. They are doing the handmaiden's job for capitalist America, the millionaires and billionaires. There will be no protection for anybody. Do you understand this? Do you get this? Does this sink in? I know a lot of liberals or Democrats or progressives get this, but you crazed right-wingers and Republicans, do you understand that this bureau, the whole idea behind it is to prevent you and your spouse and your children and your family and your nieces and nephews and everybody that you deal with, your preacher, your rabbi, whatever the hell kind of a life you have, to prevent you people from being gouged, lied to, defrauded, ripped off, see everything that you own disappear because what you thought was a good investment or a good move turned out to be a huge trap set for you by capitalist America, waiting for you to walk in to it so they could slam it shut and devour your ass. Do you not get that? What do you think Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is? What do you think it is? Do you think it's some commie design to, take your assets when just the opposite is true? The only reason you oppose it, Mr. or Ms. Conservative, is because your filthy member of Congress, your Republican senator or a House member, has been instructed to instruct you to oppose it. And you have no idea why. To block a perfectly qualified and moderate nominee, Richard Cordray. Jesus God, look him up! To block someone like this, the senator, simply because they don't want the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to do its job. This bureau was created to try to guarantee that American consumers have a strong advocate in the financial sector. In the financial sector. Don't you get it yet? How many of these crises do you people have to go through? And I'm talking about you Republicans. Are you so goddamn stupid you're going to continue to blame it on some obscure Democrat? Look what happened to the SNL debacle. The Bush family behind that one. I mean, it just happens over and over and over again. And Limbaugh continues and the rest of his scum to lead you around by your noses with their memes and their distortions and their misdirection and tell you, well, you know, it was the Kenyan who did it. He shouldn't even be president. And meanwhile, the corporatists, the billionaires and millionaires, they sit back and laugh at you over and over and over again, just like the right-wing politicians laugh at the religious right over and over and over again. You keep sending the scum to office, and they keep just sticking it in your ribs and breaking it off. How can you be so stupid? How can you not understand what the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is designed to do? Do you know anything about it? Of course you don't. Of course you don't. You've been told, well, it's another one of those big bureaucracies. We want our government back. Well, I'll tell you what, I want it back like it was in the good old days when men were men and women could, something like that. Don't you get it? Don't you understand where you live? Republicans will continue to protect their masters. This is what they are paid to do. The corporatists and the capitalists, the big banks, then do anything to protect their constituents, the very people whose money the big banks continue to steal. Jesus God, I if I woke up one morning in a Kafka-style novel and found I couldn't move because I'd turned into a Republican, son of a bitch, somehow I'd get my hands on a weapon and just, you know, blow my cockroach brains all over the ceiling. Well, Kathy, that was a Kafka novel. Well, it was. He woke up. What was his name? You read that just like I did. He woke up. He was a cockroach. Yeah. No, the guy's name. Yeah, it was Metamorphosis. But what was the guy's name? He was a Hungarian Jew. Was he Hungarian? I forget. Doesn't matter. We'll be right back.
Well, I can't believe I've seen the day when all our rights will be taken away. Would you have guessed that a little collie weed could ever bring all of these vultures in a field? When it feels like we're living in a police state, you broke the law, so accept your fate. They pull your car.
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Senate Republicans, of course, are just doing what they are paid to do. They are, excuse me, they're being paid to destroy the American system, and any hope of representation for the consumer or the middle class or the working class or union reps, whatever. This is what they're, the reason they're in office. Some of them were voted in, some of them got into office because of rigged elections, rigged voting machines, but enough of them got in based on the lies that they told their constituents. However, their constituents have become so brainwashed that the constituents clamor for more consumer protection destruction. Not more consumer protection, but destruction of any attempt to protect them. And, of course, a lot of these yahoos think that they don't need protection. What? Protection from what? What are you talking about? I'm American. No, you're not. You're a chump. You're a half-wit. You're a moron. That's what you are. Because you have no future. Pretty soon you will have had no past. So why do you persist? Why not wake up and smell the death that's staring you right in the face? What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you, conservative? I know you can't answer. It's like asking a drunk, what is wrong with you? Man. Republicans are closing off Americans' ability to protect themselves or assert their rights under the Constitution, under some umbrella of common sense. This is what the Republicans are doing. And it's just like, you know, Bob Alexander wrote about it. Noam Chomsky has written about it. Chris Hedges has written about it. I hesitate to put myself in that exalted company of Bob Alexander, Noam Chomsky, and Chris Hedges, but I'll do it anyway. I've talked about it. Bruce Enberg has written about it. Michael and Roswell has emphasized points about it. The list goes on and on. You listen to this program. You know who contributes, who says these things over and over and over and over again. So where's the disconnect? Here at home, we have Republicans who are systematically with pure intent to do so, dismantling anything and everything that might maintain the life of the middle class. Overseas, we have this horror going on in Durban, South Africa. Once again, the United States and China. While the world is suffocating, very slowly suffocating, the U.S. and China continue to bitch and dicker and try to move chess pieces around to see who gets the advantage. And the planet continues to heat up at a pace far greater than anticipated by even the most conservative scientists. And back home, millions of people don't even goddamn believe it. Ah, no, this is some Democrat trick. Where does that come from? I'll tell you where it comes from, and you know this. I don't have to tell you. It comes from 30 years of right-wing dominated talk radio. And in San Francisco, you're about to experience it yourselves. All liberal talk. Gone. Replaced with the Beck types. On your liberal talk station. But it's not just San Francisco. It's all over the country. And it's been going on for 30 years. To the point where you have a huge plurality of Americans who no longer can think. And they all vote Republican. And they all watch Fox, the Rupert Murdoch terror broadcast organization. They listen to Limbaugh and Hannity and Savage and the rest of these filthy, degenerate murderers, society murderers. And they think they understand what's going on.
Yeah, we don't need no consumer financial. Well, what is that about? Oh, it's another one of those bureaucracies, right? Like OSHA. You know, OSHA, they make you put a little sticker on the ladder that says you're not supposed to climb above that step. Oh, goddamn. Who needs a sticker?
You do. So this morning, the Senate effectively rejected Obama's nominee to head this bureau. And as it was reported, where? I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know where. MSNBC, was it MSNBC online? MSNBC.com? Maybe. The final tally was 53-45 with Republican Olympia Snow of Maine voting present. Oh, a lot of courage there, right, Miss Snow? Present. And Scott Brown of Massachusetts facing Elizabeth Warren, who invented this bureau, was the lone dissenting Republican vote. He voted in favor of it. Hey, what's the matter, Scott? You get a little bit worried back there in Massachusetts, aren't you, huh? Elizabeth Warren is going to make you a one-term senator. Say goodnight, Scott. And as the writer here says, the only mystery is who will Americans blame for the failure? Well, hopefully, I watched Obama's press conference this morning, and the question said, have you taken off the table the possibility of a recess appointment for Richard Cordray? And he said no. And then Obama launched into one of his tirades that I just wish he would have been using against his Republican dogs from day one. So much I wish that Obama would have done so that I could honestly continue to support him with my little stinky vote. That's all I have. So who will Americans blame? The Democrats spent this past week campaigning for Cordray in states where Republican senators face re-election campaigns. And Mitch McConnell, has there ever been a more useless, least effective Senate minority leader than this creep? Every time I see McConnell, my skin crawls. I haven't been, even Tom DeLay. didn't affect me that way. Even Newt Gingrich doesn't. But every time, Eric Cantor, John Boehner, almost said Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney is unique. He just makes my whole goddamn body feel like it's about to dissolve. But Mitch McConnell, every time I see him, I just get this crawling. It's like, the guy's name was Gregor, by the way. It's like in Metamorphosis when you wake up and all of a sudden you're a huge insect and you're just laying there. Uh-oh. McConnell goes to the well of the Senate and said Obama's playing politics. The nerve of the son of a bitch. Obama is playing politics. Here's what he said Tuesday on the Senate floor. Now he's suddenly making a push to confirm his nominee because it fits into some picture he wants to paint about who the good guys and the bad guys are in Washington. No, you piece of vomit. Not in Washington. In New York. On Wall Street. So once again, he's going to use the Senate floor this week to stage a little political theater. He's setting up a vote he knows will fail so he can show up afterward and say he's shocked. That's how Mitch McConnell, a Senate minority leader, somebody who's in a leadership position, who knows better. Mitch McConnell is a swine. But he has had at least a high school education. He does know what's going on. He also knows that his political life depends on being the kind of, being the kind of butt boy that he is willing to be for corporate America. Whatever they tell him to do, I'll do it. I want to be Senate majority leader next session. A couple of days ago in Kansas, Obama responded that the Republicans are simply being obstinate. He said, nobody claims Cordray's not qualified, but the Republicans in the Senate, this is Obama talking, but the Republicans in the Senate refuse to confirm him for the job. They refuse to let him do his job. Why? Does anyone here think that the problem that led to our financial crisis was too much oversight of mortgage lenders or debt collectors? He didn't yell. I'm yelling. I wish Obama would yell. I wish he'd call them all sons of bitches, stand up on his hind legs, and invite Mitch McConnell out behind the White House to just duke it out. Let's get this settled. Let's get it settled. No, you don't think he'll do that? That'd be kind of funny, wouldn't it? Consumer Financial Protection Bureau nominee Richard Cordray saw that nomination sink this morning because of these predatory bastards that comprise the Senate Republican caucus once again. They have struck a deal. Remember what Mitch McConnell said. Remember what this little turd said when this session began, that the primary goal of the Senate Republicans was to ensure that Barack Obama is a one-term president. And in that light, they have, it doesn't make any difference what Obama suggested, they would vote no. This is called leadership among Republicans. This is called leading the country. This is called having the interests of the American people foremost in their dead, filthy, cholesterol-clogged little hearts. Right? This is it. This is what they do. This is what they have been doing for 30 years, but it has really reached a peak with the election of the first African-American president. That was just more than somebody like Mitch McConnell could handle or any other white member of the Senate. So, retribution. And it is race. You're goddamn right it's race. Melissa Harris Perry is not off the mark when she writes that a white Democratic president with the kind of chaos to deal with that Obama has had did not have to, in addition, experience the kind of attitude that Obama has to experience. I'm not defending Barack Obama's policies, but it just infuriates me to see my country, my society, that is in such desperate need of forgiveness and redirection, being led by a bunch of goddamn psychopaths. And it gets worse every year. White House Press Secretary Jay Carney said Republicans who voted against Cordray will, quote, have to explain to their constituents why they did not support common sense reforms, end quote. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. Well, that's not true at all. These members of the Senate, come on, Jay, they're not going to go home and say, well, let me explain to you why I didn't support common sense reforms. Come on, Jay, for Christ's sake. Did you really believe that the Republican senators are going to go home and say that? What they're going to do is go home and say, well, I stopped communism again. I stopped the Negro communist in the White House from further destroying the country. Vote for me again. Vote for me again. Vote for me again. And the bobbleheads back in these red states would just sit there and go, yeah, 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 he did. Yeah, yeah, he did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We'll vote for you again forever. We know you're protecting our interests. You got to protect us from Acorn. You got to protect us from those people that would try to protect us. How did this country get so ignorant? Who was, boy, I have another senior moment, the sage of Baltimore who, what was his name? Don't email me. Just let me sit here and flounder. But the guy who made all the comments about asininity of the American people. No, not P.T. Barnum. what do they call him? The Sage of Baltimore. I forget. Oh, well. It's okay. Don't look it up. Don't, you know, I guess I could always use Google. I should have Google up on the screen all the time because I keep forgetting things. Like why I'm here tonight. H.L. Mencken? Was that who it was? Okay. Thank you, Kathy.
I just looked it up.
You looked it up. Okay. If Obama uses a recess appointment, and most people, including Obama, most people either feel he will, or in Obama's case, he says he will. Well, he says it's not off the table. That's what he said this morning. But the Republicans would say that if he does a recess appointment, that'll threaten the legitimacy of the entire agency, as if there was any legitimacy in the agency as far as Republicans are concerned to begin with. But this is what they do. Plus, a recess appointment might trigger litigation from the banks the agency would try to regulate. There's not a bank out there. There's not a predatory bank out there. And I hate them all. Every single bank in this country, except little family-owned banks, you know, in the foothills of North Georgia Mountains, maybe. But every single bank that is global or international or national, they are there for one reason and one reason only, to steal, loot, and pillage. That's it. You think they want a consumer financial protection agency or protection bureau looking over their shoulder saying, well, wait a minute, you're saying that 2 plus 2 equals 39. No, only equals 4. It equals 39. These dumbasses about to sign the mortgage, you'll never know. Shut up. Go away! Well, it just gets curiouser and curiouser, doesn't it, Alice? I mean, it just doesn't stop. It just doesn't stop. Okay, that's right. So, is that all you got to scream about tonight, Malloy? Yeah, I guess so. I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
At some store.